Hi, this is Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bendosky.
And you're listening to Start Writing.
And this is a grammar episode on restrictive and non-restrictive relative pronouns. That may sound super boring, but you've probably gotten the writing advice, delete all your that's, or go on a witch hunt to delete these. And so we're going to talk about what these are used for, what they mean, and the cases where you can delete them and the cases where you can't. So you have an understanding of what they're saying and why they're saying it. So we'll talk about some of the great and ridiculous debate behind this, because it is really silly. And we'll get into all of that today in grammar. But first, this week in critiques. So I was at my writing group this last week. And I had a minor character in my novel named Alan Wallace, and I'd spelled it W-A-L-U-S. And one of the first critiques they gave me was, he says, when I saw that, the first thing I thought was walrus.
Yeah, me too.
And then I had to look back and be like, no, it's Wallace. And so they change it to the more common spelling because it's tripping me up. And I was like, okay, yep, done.
Cool. So. Was there any way, or is there any particular reason that you had spelled it the other way?
Yeah, it was the origin of the characters, but I was like, it's more important that the character not, that the reader not stumble on that last name.
Is it like Welsh or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, so that's, that's why I wanted to,
Alan Walrus.
But yeah, so my point is that, you know, particularly because he's not the main character and that point of his backstory is not like super important, I didn't mind changing it. I'd rather the readers not stumble.
Yeah.
So if it was different, like, you know, if I'm writing some kind of King Arthur tale and his Welsh background and all of that, super important, I maybe would fight them on that and be like, I'm not changing that. It's too important to the core of the story. But here, not as much.
Yeah.
So easy to swap that out.
It's a good call.
Yeah. So did you have anything for writing true?
I did not. I did not do hardly any reading over the Christmas break. Last book I read was...
What did you do on Christmas break? You didn't write? You didn't read?
I tried to write. That's what I was doing. I was trying to write. the last book I read was Charlie Darwin's On the Origin of Species.
Oh.
But I didn't really have any good critiques because it wasn't really fiction. So. Anyway, it was a good book.
That sounds good. Okay. So for the discussion, right... Delete all your that's, go on your witch hunts, right? And so I remember getting this advice and rolling it over in my head, delete all your that's. I'm like, that doesn't sound right. Like doesn't sound like you can do that. First of all, sometimes you use that as a gender neutral or more of a non-animate pronoun. Those cannot be deleted. Bring me that. Can't delete that. It's just bring me. Then that's not clear at all. So those ones have to stay. So what we're going to be looking at is the relative pronoun. So I'm going to give you a few examples so you understand what I mean by this. So here's a list of words that can be the relative pronoun. That, which, who, whom, and whose. Okay, and so then let's get...
And so you're saying a grammar Nazi would recommend that you cut all of those when you see them in your manuscript?
Not a grammar Nazi. This is other writers. This is writing advice. Delete all your that's. Go on witch hunts.
Witch meaning go through W-H-I-C-H.
Yeah.
Hunts.
Yeah. And delete all of them.
But so, also who, whom, and whose.
When, yeah. So, okay. So, and we're going to talk about like that advice applies to relative pronouns, but it does not apply to all relative pronouns.
Okay, so you're saying that is good advice to an extent.
To an extent, but we'll
talk about the nuance.
So we'll talk about the nuance and why it's done. We'll talk about where to put the commas when you're using them. All of that.
Okay.
And
yeah,
so,
let's go.
So you'll be able to when your fellow writer points at your that and says you have to delete this, you say no. This is the objective relative pronoun. Not deleting it. Like learn your grammar.
Zing.
There you go. So anyway, all right. So let's get a few examples here because this is a little bit tricky. So there are so you have relative pronouns that are in the object position and in the subject position. And then within that, we also have what are called restrictive, and then there are non-restrictive. So the first thing we want to look at is a restrictive relative. Its purpose is to identify a single one within a group. So bring me that cup. Now, if I point to it, then it clarifies what it is. So that's restrictive. So if we've got 10 different cups and I bring me that red cup, then you know which of all the cups you're supposed to bring, right? The that.
Now, what if you said the red cup?
Then
it's doing the same thing.
It's doing the same thing, but we're working within the example because I want to talk about relatives, right? So bring me the red cup. You're using an adjective as opposed to a relative pronoun.
Okay. That. Okay. Yeah. I got you.
So, okay. So the restrictive limits one out of the group. Another one I've said is, you know, if you have multiple cars, like these are the car keys to the car which is in the driveway. If there's multiple cars, but it clarifies which of the cars it's referring to specifically. So it restricts the possibilities down to the one.
And I think we're going to talk later about the car that is in the driveway versus which is in the driveway.
We will talk about that. Okay. That's part of the ridiculous debate.
Oh, great. Yes.
So we will talk about when to use which and why. It doesn't really matter.
Oh, excellent.
So, but yeah. And so the non-restrictive just adds information, but it's not essential to the sentence, right? If I'm talking about a specific car, then you need to know which car that is. So we use the restrictive saying it's this one specifically, right? The car which is in the driveway is having engine problems, right? So if I tell you the car is having problems, your question is which one, right? Because there's more than one. So you need, so the restrictive then clarifies car that is in the driveway, in the driveway.
So give me an example of non-restrictive.
So non-restrictive. Hang on. I've got one written down here. Let me just ensure.
Okay.
Okay.
If that's skipping ahead, let's just get to it when we get to it.
Well, no, because that's what we're covering right now. All students who do their work should pass easily. So that restricts it. And then we have my friend who lives in New York dropped it off earlier. And so who lives in New York is just additional information, right? I'm not saying, you know, I'm not referring to a group. I'm referring to a singular friend who happens to live in New York, dropped it off earlier, right?
Okay.
So it's adding information, but it doesn't restrict it from a group, right? So I have one friend who lives in New York, and so I'm not restricting it to them.
I think I'm getting that.
So yeah, so it says non-restrictive is how it's clarified. I prefer to refer to this as the descriptive relative. So it's just adding descriptions to something.
Okay, yeah, that makes
sense. It's not essential. So when you're using the non-essential, or what I call the descriptive, you will put that within commas because you can pull it out of the sentence and it still works just fine.
Well, so, I like to think of that as parenthetical commas. It's like you're putting a pair of parentheses, except that you don't want to
draw that much attention to it.
Yeah, you don't want to make it that submissive or like... I think of parentheses as like quiet or whispering or like, this doesn't matter that much. And the commas do the same thing, except leaves it as equal with the rest of the sentence, as opposed to like, let's quiet this down.
So when you're trying to clarify the specific one in a group using that restrictive relative, you do not put that in commas because it's an essential part of the communication.
Okay.
Okay. So, so that covers how we're going to, So how we're going to frame it with commas, the difference between a restrictive and a non-restrictive clause. So the great debate of that and which is, I point out that this is the great debate and it is ridiculous. And so this is the, you know, when you should which use these things. So if you bring me that book, bring me the book that you read last week, and then bring me the book which you read last week, right? So you could use either one there and it works just fine. Right?
Man, when I hear that second version, the book which you read last week, it sounds snooty.
It sounds snooty? Okay.
It does. I don't know if that's accurate. That's just how my ear picked
it up. Okay. So some grammarians claim that you should use that for restrictive clauses. And you will
I've heard this rule.
Which for non-restrictive clauses. So that is one argument for how these should be used. But here is where it starts to fall apart. Now, I will point out that if you write in Word, that is the grammar rule it's following.
So I think that's how I would do it before hearing this episode, at least. That's the rule I would follow.
So, yeah. So, and the grammarians have written this way and have tried to push this to make that clarity, mm-hmm. right? Because it would be sweet and simple and just like, oh, yeah, okay. So if I'm restricting, I'll use that. If I'm just adding information, I'll use which. And then if you're using which, you know to use commas. It's clean and it's smooth and easy. But that's not how it's been done, nor is it how all grammarians propose we should use the words. And mm-hmm. this is where the debate gets in and we get confusing. So, other grammarians claim the exact opposite. Use which for a restrictive...
Is this organized on geographic lines? Or what are these camps called?
So, I believe there's Brian Greer. I can't remember all of them. So, there's several different big grammarians who've written, you know, very big grammar books. And like I said, they disagree. It's exact opposite their recommendations there. Most people will simply use these interchangeably, right? I'm a that person. I use that all the time. I never use which.
Yeah, right? I think I'm mostly the same.
Which is a deliberate thought process for me, okay? Now, here's where it gets really messy. The other debate is we should use that for inanimate, so books, objects, right?
I've heard
and
this.
You should use which for people, right? Or animates, like an animal. So even, I guess with a person, you could use who, but for a cat or a dog, you'd use which, because it's an animate, right?
Wow.
If that's the case, then that negates the previous rule, right? Because you can only really follow one of these two, because it's going to depend on the situation. The point is that there's no consensus. So you kind of just do whatever. Now, what we're going to look at is getting rid of them. So we've talked about how they're used, when they're used, why they're used. Now let's look at getting rid of them. So bring me the
book. So sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead.
So what's your like what conclusion do we draw from the fact that there's so much confusion over what the correct rule is?
The conclusion is that if anyone points out this is wrong, you can tell them they're wrong. That's the bottom line, is there's no really actual any kind of rule or guidance on this that's universal. And so you can have a teacher who will say, no, that's incorrect. And you say, well, this grammarian teaches very specifically this is correct. And so you can debate that to victory anytime, because there is no consensus on how these should be used.
I think personally, I'm a strong believer that you should write like you talk. However, the exception is don't talk like an idiot.
Unless your character does.
Yeah. But I think for the most part, when I'm trying to decide which word to use where,
I try to formulate
it in a way that would sound like a natural conversation.
Right.
And not something snooty or not something weird. Mm-hmm. But anyway, there are times when
I'm very much a that person, and I think that's probably a cultural thing. I think depending on where you're from, it's gonna be one way or the other.
Okay.
That's what I imagine.
Yeah.
But like I said, there's no consensus on this. So you can really do whatever you want and you'll be able to justify
it. Yeah, cool. So, all right.
because the point is people have argued this ways and that. And there's no clear usage pattern or anything. It's all over
confusing.
The place. So, okay. So we have bring me the book that you read last week. And we can just delete that. Bring me the book you read last week. And that is one of those that's that the writer's advice is saying, delete all your that's, right? We pull out the relative and it does not change a thing.
Yeah,
so,
I like that.
And if you'll notice, that's a restrictive clause, right? I'm specifying which of all the books.
Man, I had forgotten this. I had a professor in my undergrad that told me about this rule, and I've mostly been deleting these that's. But going back to the write like you talk, I feel like there are moments when that can emphasize the thing. So I occasionally do leave it in, but I do like the rule of if you can delete it, delete it.
Yeah. So in screenwriting, there are two things. You have what are called beats and you have letting something land, right?
Tell me letting someone land.
So the concept here is the same with both, right? So if you're writing the script, you write beat. And what it means is you want the actor to take a little bit of a pause before the next point of dialogue. It's not, we haven't changed characters, we haven't had big action. It's all one piece, but you want them to take a break. And what that does is that lets a moment land. They've spoken this line of dialogue, and then there's this just moment for the audience to think about it before it moves to the next step. And so you can use that relative pronoun in your writing to do exactly that. You write this really good line and you want them to pause. Now you could pull out that relative and simply move in to the next part of the sentence right away, or you can keep that for the whole purpose of letting them sit and think about the previous line that extra half second.
That's a great concept. That's really cool.
Yeah. So that is a when you could leave it in intentionally, even though it could be deleted without messing up clarity.
Cool.
So then we'll go to our next line. Okay. Yeah. So we can remove it from that sentence, right? Bring me the book that you read last week becomes bring me the book you read last week. But like I said, it's not quite that simple. So if we look at our other sentence, my friend who lives in New York dropped it off last week. If we pull out the who, we get my friend lives in New York dropped it off last week. It's like, what the heck? It falls apart, right? It doesn't work anymore. And so we're gonna explore that rule right now as to why this is. Now I am gonna do a little bit of word ninjutsu to show you how we can still cut this relative. So I could say my friend the New Yorker dropped it off last week.
Okay.
Where I've pulled out the relative by simply rewriting the statement so it's not relative. The same thing with you did with the cup, right? Mm-hmm. You know, bring me that red cup. You said bring me the red cup. You converted it to an adjective and therefore pulled the relative.
Yeah.
But so let's go into when to drop the relative and when not to. Okay. So let me lend you the book that I just finished. And then let me lend you the book I just finished, right? In fact, like if you're just listening to it, you may even not even hear that I've dropped that. It's just so smooth. And then I can't remember the person whom I met last night. Right? I can't remember the person I met last night. So in both situations, we pull the relative without a problem. Right?
Yeah, that's good. Man, and it just cleans up. I mean, what is that? 10% of the sentence?
So
it's just a little bit cleaner.
A little bit cleaner.
It's just, I love
that.
Yeah,
but the important thing to note is that we are pulling out a relative that is an object position. So if we look at whom and who, we couldn't pull the who. Right. And who is a subject word as opposed to an object word. You can't see that with a that because it functions the same in both positions. But you can see it with who and whom. So you can see my friend who lives in New York, we have to leave it in there. Whereas whom, we pull out. Okay, so when you can't drop the relative. So when you can't drop it, it's in the subject position. So I saw my friend who lives in China. And so then we pull out the previous part. It says, who lives in China? Right?
So this reminds me of a joke. I traveled to China and I asked our tour guide, who is the president of China? And he responded by saying, who is the president of China? And he recognized that it was a joke, but the president's name was who? Like H-U is the president. And he laughed. I was like, yeah, that's what I'm asking. Who? And he said, yes, who is the president of China? It was so great. So I love that you just used that.
Little bit of
who lives in China.
That's awesome. Yeah. Who is the president of China? He says, yes, who is the president of China?
Okay, so sorry to interrupt. Okay. I saw my friend who lives in China.
Yeah, I saw my friend who lives in China. So what happens is we pull out everything preceding the relative. And if it stands alone, then the relative is in the subject position. Who lives in China stands alone as a sentence. The person whom I met last night doesn't. It's like what you feel like you're missing part of the sentence because you are. You only have an object. And so that is how you identify that. Now, for the most part, I don't imagine anyone is going to really remember or retain this after. The point is you now understand that there is a rule here that's function as to when you can and can't delete them. When you will and won't delete them, you'll just be able to read it and feel it.
Yeah.
But you've had it explained, so know that if you need to look it up, it's there. There is a very specific rule of grammar at play that determines whether you can or cannot delete that relative. So in recap, we have non-restrictive and restrictive relatives. And non-restrictive, which we'll also call descriptive, are going to be encapsulated in commas. And restrictive are essential. They're communicating very specifically what it is. They're restricting it down to a specific one, is essential to the sentence, and is not put in commas. You will want to delete relatives whenever possible, with the exception of putting in a beat for the intention of letting a line land.
I just want to zoom out a little further and look at the... This is a principle that I feel like you have taught me, and I think is so important in polishing your writing, that if you can take a single word out, you're just making it flow a little bit better. And if you take out 10% of every sentence in your manuscript, you have the same exact story, but it's just a little bit purer, a little bit easier to access. Yeah. And I think it can be transformative in your writing.
Yeah. So if you're familiar with our episode on wasted words, we talk about this a lot. And we talk about how fast people read, and we talk about, you know, set pieces and sequences. We talked about, you know, making sure that in a single sitting of a reading, people will get to certain points within it. And cutting out these relatives will help you to hit that word count better. And so there is, we'll cover this in more depth at another point. So 1,200 words is where you'll want to hit what's called a turn. Within it. And that is essentially designed to create curiosity in the reader. And you need to be hitting that every 1,200 words.
Okay. Huh.
And so there's a couple things that happen if you're hitting that 1,200 words. So let's say you're very word efficient and you're hitting your turns every 1,200 words around, right-ish. Then that's a very efficient told novel. Now, if you're cluttering your manuscript with your wasted words, your adverbs that aren't pulling their weight, with your relatives, with your extra, you know, and thens, and all of that, if you still hit that 1,200 word count, then what happens is a lot of that is fluff. We just dropped the mic.
Literally, we just dropped the mic.
But yeah,
that's right. That
then what happens is the story can feel underdeveloped or rushed when you hit those turns, because there's so little being communicated in the text itself. Although usually what happens when you have a lot of these wasted words is you end up hitting your turns much later, which makes the pacing feel slow. Hmm. So that is relative pronouns. You know all about it now. So, and you know that if you use that or which, you can fight your way to correctness no matter what, because everyone has argued every which way on this topic. Thanks for listening. As always, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review. Tell your friends. If you enjoy the show, we'd love it if you check out one of our books and leave us a review there. Write in if you have any suggestions or comments, something you'd like us to cover or talk about more in depth. And if you want the links to show notes and YouTube clips and different things like that, sign up for the newsletter and we'll link you to all of those. And that's the end of our episode, so it's time to start writing.